भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। हरे कृष्ण। Eleventh verse, right? Canto 11, chapter number 5, text number 11. Loke vyayayam smisha madhya seva. Loke vyayayam smisha madhya seva. Nityahi jantor nahi tatrat. व्यवस्थितिस्तेषु विवाह यज्ञ सुराग्रहैर आसु निवृत्तिरैषिता निष्ठा।
इन दिस मटेरियल वर्ल्ड द कंडीशन सोल इज ऑलवेज इंक्लाइन टू सेक्स मीट ईटिंग एंड इंटॉक्सिकेशन देयरफॉर रिलीजियस स्क्रिप्चर्स नेवर एक्चुअली इनकरेज सच एक्टिविटीज। Although the scriptural injunctions provide for sex through sacred marriage, for meat eating through sacrificial offerings, and for intoxication through acceptance of ritual cups of wine, such ceremonies are meant for the ultimate purpose of renunciation. Notes.
So, in this material world, the conditioned soul is always inclined for these three things: sex, intoxication, and meat eating. These three, when they are apparently recommended in the scriptures, there is a purpose for that. These recommendations are not actually recommendations, they are concessions given for those who cannot control themselves. So that clarification is given in these three verses from 11 to 13. Intoxication is also there. That is also mentioned. So how exactly one can engage in these three? 13th verse will say. So those who are not situated in pure Krishna consciousness are always inclined towards material sense gratification. So for such persons, there are numerous Vedic injunctions for rituals that bestow material sense pleasure in a regulated manner. So, if there are no such restrictions from the side of scriptures, people will anyways engage in them in an unrestricted manner. No regulation. They are addicted to it, they want to do it. But if scriptures themselves are mentioning that, and people will think that, oh, I am aligning with the scriptures also and I am doing my sense gratification also. So, in that there is some balance, there is some regulation there. Instead of engaging in such activities unrestrictedly, they will engage in them restrictedly, respecting the authority of Vedas. So, the conditioned soul thereby becomes accustomed to indirectly worshipping the Supreme Lord by accepting the austerity of regulated sense gratification in obedience to the Vedic way of life. Through purification, the living being gradually develops a higher taste and becomes directly attracted to the spiritual nature of the Lord. First, indirectly follow the instructions of the Lord, relax the instructions, then directly do it. For example, we don't eat onion and garlic. Someone just comes to the temple, right? We may say, it's okay, you can continue, but chant Hare Krishna also. So, over a period of time, he may develop an inclination to inquire further. What do you people do? You eat? No, we don't eat. Because of these effects. When he personally, voluntarily inquires for more details into the process, he is exhibiting a willingness to follow better than what he is doing now. Then we will reveal more details. On the first day we don't reveal. Right? So, similarly, at least he is respecting the scriptures and then having a restricted sense gratification instead of unrestricted sense gratification. So that is the purpose of these kind of relaxed instructions. They are not considered to be recommendations or prescriptions. They are only concessions. So the third paragraph discusses about the sex life. The injunction that one must accept a wife, approach a wife for sex life in, is explained by the Vaishnava Acharyas as follows. In this world, almost every man is lusty and desires sex life with any attractive woman he meets. Right? To that extent, a conditioned soul is infatuated with lusty desires. Some statistics say, I don't know exactly where I heard it, say that a lusty thought enters the mind of a man every 6 to 7 minutes on an average. So one doctor said this. Actually, for an ordinary materialistic man, it is an accomplishment if he can restrict himself to relationships with his lawful wedded wife. Considering the magnitude of the desires, overwhelming desires to enjoy with opposite sex, just sticking to one woman, wedded wife, is a great advancement that he has made. Right? So that's where restriction is there. But because familiarity breeds contempt, the natural tendency for the husband is that he has to enjoy with wife unrestrictedly. That also there is some regulation. Or even with your wife also you have some restriction. So like that he starts regulating his sense gratificatory desires, respecting some Vedic injunctions. So Vedic injunctions are not ruthlessly ruling out all his propensities, but allowing some concessions in the initial stages, right? So where there is no such Vedic injunction ordering one to approach his wife, many men would naturally be inclined to neglect their wives and pollute other women by illicit connections. If such restrictions are there, are not there, then people may unrestrictedly enjoy. So nowadays, that kind of unrestricted relationships are also quite prominent, right? As Kali Yuga is progressing. So unrestricted enjoyment. So however, such an injunction for conditioned souls does not apply to great souls who are fixed on spiritual platform and are transcendental to material sex desire. Nivrittir ishta. The actual purpose of Vedic scriptures is to bring one back home, back to Godhead. Antakalecha mahameva. Now, when we say Vedaischa sarvai rahameva vedyo, by studying all the Vedas, I am to be known. The purpose of Vedic study is Krishna. So when we are saying that purpose of Vedic study is Krishna, how can those Vedas recommend this kind of illicit activities? Right? But when we see recommendations about this illicit sex, not illicit sex, sex, meat eating and intoxication in the scriptures, we should understand that that is one step to bring one to the highest purpose of understanding Krishna, right? By making people to align themselves with Vedic injunctions. So Vedas cannot contain anything which is not related to Krishna. Even these apparent prescriptions given there are also ultimately with the purpose of connecting a soul back to Krishna. The ultimate goal of Vedas cannot be any type of absorption in material senses, either licit or illicit. So that is about engaging in sex. Then second, the last three lines, that paragraph, from there intoxication and meat eating are mentioned. They are elaborated. So those who are mad after meat eating are instructed to perform Vedic ceremonies by which they are permitted to consume five clawed animals. Which animals they can eat, that is also mentioned. So the Vedic rules and regulations gradually restrict sense gratification are called vidhi. That is the definition of vidhi. Restricting sense gratification. The niyama means the injunctions governing activities that human being ordinarily would not be inclined to perform. Now, human being naturally does not want to do that, but there is a niyama. You cannot do it. or you have to do it, although you don't want to do it. So acting against one's inclination is niyama. Okay. And vidhi means regulating one's sense gratification and doing something. So although some concession is made for more violent class of men, one should actually completely give up this cruel activity, because even a slight discrepancy in animal sacrifices will cause havoc in one's life. Animal sacrifices are to be performed in a very careful way. So, namamsa bhakshane dosho namadye nacha maithune pravrittir esha bhutanam nivrittistu mahafala. It may be considered that meat eating, intoxication and sex indulgence are natural propensities of the conditioned souls, and therefore such person should not be condemned for these activities. But unless one gives up those sinful activities, there is no possibility of achieving actual perfection of life. You need not condemn those people who are engaging in these activities, but we need to be convinced that what they are doing is not correct. Because wherever someone is, a devotee's duty is to connect them to Krishna consciousness to the best of one's ability. So condemning any living entity for what they are is not our job. Connecting a living entity from wherever they are with Krishna, that is our job. That is supposed to be our priority. So that is supposed to be one's job profile. So condemnation is not our thing. But we should be convinced that these three are not correct. Sex indulgence, meat eating, intoxication. Those who claim to be the follower of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and who are seriously planning to go back to Godhead in the near future should not become mindlessly attracted by Vedic rituals that are meant to attract those who are hopelessly bound up in the material bodily concept of life. Hopelessly bound. So these Vedic regulations are meant for those who are hopelessly bound. So because these recommendations or whatever are given in the scriptures, one may think that, oh fine, I think I can also do it in a restricted way. Vedas are recommending. That is also connecting to Krishna consciousness. Yeah, that is meant for some low-grade people, not for everyone. So in the seventh canto, one example comes that if you pour ghee in the fire, then fire will only burn. It will not be extinguished. Similarly, if you feed sense gratification to the senses, the desires for sense gratification will only increase. They will not diminish. However, if you take, you know, 20 kilos of ghee and then just dump on the fire, fire will be extinguished. Similarly, if you engage in sense gratification so intensely and vigorously, then you will develop disgust for it. So one way of coming out of sense gratification is overindulgence in sense gratification. That is also mentioned in Bhagavatam. But that is not a recommendation. That is mentioned for people who are so low grade and who cannot understand the significance of any restriction. Right? They can only come out of their sense gratificatory tendency only by overindulgence, and that overindulgence will anyways disgust them. So that is the way. But that's not a recommended way. Recommended way is pull your mind away from sense gratification. Focus on positive engagement than negative engagement. Instead of engaging negatively, like in an exaggerated way, better divert that propensity to engage in something in a positive way. That's what is the main recommendation. So these are not recommendations. These are concessions, considering the combinations of modes because of which people are influenced. Dhanam cha dharmaika phalam yato vai. Jnanam cha vijnanam anuprashanti. Griheshu yunjanti kalevarasya. Mrityum na pashyanti duranta viryam.
The only proper fruit of acquired wealth is religiosity, on the basis of which one can acquire a philosophical understanding of life that eventually matures into direct perception of the absolute truth and thus liberation from all suffering. Materialistic persons, however, utilize their wealth simply for advancement of their family situation. They fail to see that insurmountable death will soon destroy the frail material body.
Dhanam cha dharma eka phalam yato vai. Dharma eka phalam. Whatever you may be engaging in, the only proper fruit is religiosity, dharmam. The only proper fruit of acquired wealth is religiosity. Dharma aika phalam. Then jnanam sa vijnanam anuprashanti. Four stages are mentioned. One is dharma. Eka phalam is dharma. Then jnanam. One will acquire knowledge, the necessary philosophical understanding of life. After jnanam, he will get vijnanam. Jnanam sa vijnanam. So jnanam is knowledge, theoretical. Vijnanam is practical. It's realized knowledge, right? Direct realization of that knowledge. Then third, fourth stage is anuprashanti. Anuprashanti means liberation from suffering. So you engage in activities keeping dharma, focusing on dharma, first stage. Then you develop knowledge, jnanam. Then you develop realization, sa vijnanam. Then anuprashanti. Then you attain liberation. Right? By engaging in your activities with knowledge and realization, you will attain liberation. So that is the meaning of the first two lines. But these people use it for maintenance of body without seeing insurmountable death of the body. So ignoring the first two lines, what will attached householders do? Griheshu yunjanti kalevarasya. Griheshu, all the people who are attached to household life, yunjanti, they get engaged in kalevarasya mrityum. Engage in activities that are centered around material body that is destined to die. Mrityam na pashyanti dvaranta viryam. They cannot see the mrityu. They cannot see that this body is supposed to end. So when this body is destined to die, my focus is after death, where will I go? Then one has to focus on liberation, as mentioned in the first two lines. But ignoring that aspiration for liberation, they focus only on this body, which is temporary, which is destined to die. So that is an attitude of these materialistic people. And the verse begins with dhanam. So wealth is the key factor for one's sustenance in this material body. Right? Wealth gives him access to all kinds of sense gratificatory things. And wealth can degrade a person to the maximum possible extent. In the episode of Nallakuvera and Manigriva, when Narada Muni saw them naked in the Mandakini, Ganga, taking bath with some other naked girls, so Narada Muni just presented all the disadvantages of having wealth. Right? One may not have physical beauty, one may not have so much knowledge, one may not have so much of physical strength or anything. But in spite of lack of all these opulences, still he can enjoy sense gratification if he has wealth. With wealth he can buy all this, right? He doesn't have physical strength. He can use his wealth to employ bodyguards. He doesn't have physical beauty. He can throw wealth to get some cosmetics or to get some, plastic surgery, whatever he can do. And he can throw some money and then get women. Women may not come to enjoy his beauty, but because he is giving wealth, so low grade, opposite sex may get attracted to him because of his wealth. So wealth can ruin a person to the maximum possible extent. So the right utility of wealth is explained in this purport. Those things that come under the control of the proprietor are called dhanam. So wealth is not just money with whatever notes or coins that one may calculate. Anything that is under your control is called wealth. When a foolish person becomes addicted to spending all of his hard-earned money to increase the prestige of his material body and family, he is no longer able to see how death is steadily approaching his own body, as well as temporary bodies of his family and friends. Mrityuhu sarvaharasyaham. So, when this body ends, one has to meet Krishna, either in the form of mrityu or in the form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. If he remembers Krishna at the time of death, then after the body ends, he will go back to Krishna Loka. If he is attached to all these things, then he has to be forcefully be detached from all these belongings that he has. Mrityuhu sarvaharasyaham. Krishna only will come. At everybody's death, Krishna only will come. Either in the form of Mrityu to usurp everything, or in the form of Supreme Personality of Godhead to take him back to Godhead. So in Krishna Consciousness Movement, there are many religious householders who live in a simple, peaceful life and use their wealth for arranging Krishna conscious activities at home and for helping the renounced brahmacharis and sannyasis who are actively preaching Krishna consciousness in public places. The right utility of wealth is to engage it in Krishna service. Lakshmi is meant to serve Narayana. Whoever is in charge of Lakshmi, whoever has some wealth, some Lakshmi, whoever has some blessings received from Mother Lakshmi in the form of wealth, material wealth, he can utilize that in Narayana service. Life without Krishna consciousness is actually poverty. But the poverty-stricken materialist whose intelligence is limited cannot perceive that real wealth is the expansion of consciousness up to the highest level of Krishna consciousness. So not having wealth is not poverty. Not having Krishna consciousness, that is poverty. So one needs to understand the definitions properly. Poverty is lack of Krishna consciousness. Limited sensory knowledge. This one last sentence of this paragraph, last but one paragraph, is extremely important. Three things are mentioned. Pratyaksha jnana, paroksha jnana and aparoksha jnana. Pratyaksha jnana means what you, the knowledge that you acquired from your senses. Paroksha jnana means theoretical knowledge that you acquire from books and hearing. Then, aparoksha jnana means that realization, realized knowledge of the soul, not of the intelligence. So, pratyaksha jnana is not very useful if you don't have paroksha jnana. Without hearing from scriptures, from bona fide sources, it may be theoretical knowledge, no doubt, but still without backing up yourself with that theoretical knowledge, in your practical life, you cannot evaluate the situations, you cannot understand people, you cannot understand situations in a mature spirit. You need to equip yourself with sound vibration. So paroksha jnana is very important and crucial for us to make sense out of pratyaksha jnana. Senses may acquire a lot of knowledge. Our senses may be coming in contact with so many sense objects and we are gathering knowledge from senses. But if you don't have already gathered knowledge with our intelligence, paroksha jnana, if you don't have scriptural knowledge, this knowledge acquired through senses will take us nowhere. Right, but ultimately, this knowledge of this paroksha jnana, theoretical knowledge, theoretical spiritual knowledge, if that does not convert into aparoksha jnana, means direct realized knowledge of the soul, then also there is something lagging. So we need to carefully cultivate that knowledge. So it's mentioned three things: sense perception, oral reception, and sense perception is pratyaksha jnana, oral reception is paroksha jnana, and spiritual realization is aparoksha jnana. So without paroksha jnana, our pratyaksha jnana is actually mental speculation. The knowledge that we acquire through our senses, if we don't have the spiritual knowledge to process that knowledge acquired through senses, then we end up in mental speculation. So a devotee who say studies Bhagavad Gita or Bhagavatam and equips himself with sound vibration, if he sees this nature, he can see the connection between various elements of this nature with Krishna. So he's evaluating his pratyaksha jnana with his paroksha jnana. Right? When pratyaksha jnana and paroksha jnana both interact with each other and both help each other, one's understanding becomes deepened and that can become aparoksha jnana, realized knowledge. Right? So only one is not sufficient. So most materialists depend on pratyaksha jnana. Right? And some theoretical students of scriptures may just depend on paroksha jnana without converting it into aparoksha jnana. That's why this knowledge will convert into realization by service of devotees. As per according to what Vidura told Maitreya. So Vidura said, I have theoretically understood the science of soul and the Supreme Lord, third canto, 7th chapter, you remember? But this will convert into realization only when I engage in service of pure devotees like you. So now you have theoretical knowledge, paroksha jnana. For that to convert into aparoksha jnana, then there should be a medium of service to pure devotees. When you do service to pure devotees, paroksha jnana will convert into aparoksha jnana. So during this service, you will also develop a lot of pratyaksha jnana. And that your development of pratyaksha jnana is always accompanied by paroksha jnana. When paroksha jnana and pratyaksha jnana are just interacting with each other through the medium of your service, that will convert into aparoksha jnana. Make sense? So the word anuprajanti in this verse indicates that by spiritual knowledge, vijnanam, one achieves the most sublime state of eternal peace and bliss, far beyond the dreams of materialistic conditioned souls. Yad grana bhaksho vihata suraya tatha pashor alabhanam nahimsa evam yavaya prajaya naratya imam vishuddham navidusvadharmam.
According to the Vedic injunctions, when wine is offered in a sacrificial ceremonies, it is later to be consumed by smelling and not by drinking. Similarly, the sacrificial offering of animal is permitted, but there is no provision for wide-scale animal slaughter. Religious sex life is also permitted, but only in marriage for begetting children and not for sensuous exploitation of the body. Unfortunately, however, the less intelligent materialists cannot understand that their duties in life should be performed purely on the spiritual platform.
So these three things, how are they supposed to be consumed, are mentioned. Wine, just smell, don't drink. Right? Sex, only in marriage, only for producing a child, not unrestricted. What is the other one? Animal killing, not slaughterhouse animal killing, just as a sacrifice, as a part of sacrifice. So for one to eat meat or just kill an animal, he has to conduct a big ceremony, sacrifice. Every time he just can't go to fish market or whatever, meat market, and then get 1 kilo and then cook and then eat. Right? That slaughterhouse is not permitted according to scriptures. You have to conduct a big sacrifice and sacrifice one goat. Whatever meat comes, eat that. And that too, there is some periods. Not every now and then you do that. So these are the restrictions. So Madhvacharya has given the following statement in regard to animal sacrifice. They quote two verses. If the animal sacrifice is perfectly performed, the sacrificial animal immediately goes to the heavenly planets of the demigods and forefathers. So Mahaprabhu had prohibited animal sacrifice in this age. Ashwamedham gavalambham sannyasam palapaitrukam devarena sudotpattim kalam pancha vivarjayat. Ashwamedham gavalambham, cow sacrifice, horse sacrifice, they are all prohibited. Because there are no qualified brahmanas to chant mantras, and the so-called sacrificial arena becomes an ordinary butcher shop. There is no sacrifice, it's a butcher shop. in Kali Yuga. And in an earlier era, when unscrupulous persons tried to establish that animal killing and meat eating are acceptable by misinterpreting Vedic sacrifices, Buddha came. Yesterday we discussed this verse. Nindasi yagna vidhe, ha 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 shruti jatam sadaya hridaya darsita pasu ghatam. Keshava dhrita buddha sharira jai jagadisha hari. So they fall, thus they fall down altogether from the varnashram system and take birth in violent non-Vedic societies, foolishly presume the small fragments of universal religious principles prevalent there to be exclusive religion of soul. Very graphic description here. So we'll read this paragraph. Unfortunately, the conditioned souls are afflicted by four imperfections, one of which is cheating propensity. Thus they tend to exploit the concessions that Lord mercifully gives us in religious scriptures for their gradual purification. Rather than following the Vedic injunctions for simultaneously satisfying their senses and gradually elevating themselves, the conditioned souls reject the actual purpose of such apparently materialistic ceremonies and simply become more and more degraded in the ignorance of bodily concept of life. So they are meant to elevate a person, not entangle a person. If you don't focus on the purpose of these recommendations of Shastras and just overdo the act. For example, somebody is recommended to eat. He is too addicted to fried items. Pakoda. What else is there? Fried. Papad. Huh? Fryans. Puri. Kachori. So one is so addicted to eat fried items. And our doctor says you cannot eat fried items. But he's too addicted. Then the doctor tells him, okay, because you are too addicted, to stop it completely will take a toll on your mind. So you can eat only kachori. Don't eat puri, don't eat chapati, whatever, other fryans or whatever, other things you don't eat, kachori only you can eat. Fine. Every day he eats 10 kachoris. Only one, right? Only one is allowed. So that one he does to an unlimited extent. Then his health will get spoiled. So if doctor allowed that kachori, because he has no ability to completely stop eating fried items. One fried item was allowed. That too in a restricted way. But in an unrestricted way, he consumes that only. So same thing is here. So the result is, because of unrestrictedly following these concessions, right, overdoing things, he will take birth in a society where religious principles are not properly practiced, where substandard religious principles are followed as if they are the parodharma. And the entire society is filled with that kind of conviction. This, what we are doing now here, that is the ultimate religious principle. He will take birth in that kind of societies. So now, you see, you go to some tribal areas or some certain countries or some jungles where some tribal people may be living, jungle people may be living. They also have their own ways, religious practices. They call it dharma. For them, that is the ultimate dharma. Right? There is no Sanatana dharma there. Whatever is mentioned there, that is the ultimate dharma. You just go chanting Hare Krishna, going back to God. These all, they don't make sense. For us, dharma means chop off some human being, sacrifice that human being there, and that's how you get deliverance. That's what they think. Savidhana, just like the dacoits were trying to sacrifice Jadabharat, right? For them, that is the ultimate religious principle, to sacrifice a Purusha Pasu or a man animal to Kali. That is the ultimate religious principle for them. If one takes birth in such kind of societies, he is born to such dacoits, he is brought up by such parents and all his neighbors and uncles and whoever. So they are all of that kind of nature. Everybody is believing that only. And from say childhood, he will develop in such kind of faith system. What will happen to him? Until the end of his life, he is believing like that only. So one will enter such kind of births. They fall down altogether from the Varnashram system and taking birth in violent non-Vedic societies, foolishly presume the small fragments of universal religious principles prevalent there to be exclusive religion of the soul. As a result, they fall into fanaticism, embracing merely sectarian dogmatic views of religion. Such unfortunate persons are completely out of touch with their own eternal function in life and consider things to be vastly different than they are in reality. Reality is different, and that is, other things are different. So that is the misfortune. So even taking birth in a society where pure principles of religion are being followed, that's a very rare fortune. All you see, all our congregation kids, small children, 2 year, 3 year, 4 year, 5 year old children, that Rishikesh and his sister Gauri, so they were like crawling. That small girl, she was crawling when we came here in 2010. His brother, her brother, Rishikesh, he was just maybe 3-4 year old, taking a small mridanga and playing and then imitating us in Kartal in 2010, 2009. Since those days we are doing. Now they do kirtan, they do all the things. So they are born and brought up in this kind of atmosphere. They are not ordinary souls. They are special souls. To take birth in such an atmosphere itself is also very great. Since childhood you are just hearing Hare Krishna. As soon as the child takes birth and then opens the eyes, he sees mother's face and father's face with tilak. What a great fortune it is, right? If someone takes birth and then opens his eyes and then sees father and mother in some, whatever, in dadi, right, in some different kinds of attires, modern attires, smoking cigarette. Baby, bachava, bachiva. So like that, he will come with smoke and with wine bottle. So they are not taking birth in that kind of societies, right? So though one who takes birth in such kind of societies must be having this kind of background, right? So nobody will take birth in a family just like that, just by chance. There's a lot of science that goes into it. Yes, yetvanvevam vido santaha stabdha sadabhimanina पशुं द्रुह्यन्ति विश्रब्धाः प्रेत्य खादन्ति ते च तान्.
Those sinful persons who are ignorant of actual religious principles yet consider themselves to be completely pious, without compunction commit violence against innocent animals who are fully trusting in them in their next lives. Such sinful persons will be eaten by the same creatures they have killed in this world.
The fate of such animal killers is given here. Right. So you know there are some cannibals. Cannibals means man-eaters. Purushada. In the first canto, Kunti Maharani offers prayers. Vishan Mahagner Purushada Darshanad. This Hidimba, Hidimbasur, so they are all there, right, in the jungles, in the forests where Pandavas were visiting. So this, some of them were cannibals, they just eat human beings. So if one takes birth in cannibal society, they also have their own rituals. They imagine some Bhairava or some other deity and then offer human beings there, cut them, eat them, right, that is their religion. Right, one may enter such kind of lower species, abominable species. So, yeah, yet this verse says the fate of animal killers. And out of their sheer foolishness, they consider themselves pious. The irony of the whole story is they mercilessly slaughter animals and they think they are very religious people. Now you see, at least in my childhood, I can say so many South Indian people are there, neighbors. They just kill some goat or some, what to say, hen, cock, and what other things they kill for Dasara. Dasara is Kali Puja, this happens, right? So Dasara means, you have to understand, there is meat eating in everybody's house. And Sankranti, there are three things, Bhogi, Sankranti, Kanuma. It's a three-day festival. Sankranti is 15th January, generally it comes, 14th or 15th. The next day is the day for eating unrestrictedly meat. So, and they think that is religion, that's a part of the religion. Oh, today you didn't cook meat, huh? My God, today we have to cook. That is a religion, it's part of religion, right? They show compassion and pity on those people who do not eat meat on that days, right? That's a part of religion. They think they are, other people are irreligious, fanatic people, right? Out of place, right? They are like aliens. That's how they think. So these are certain systems. They think they are pious. That is their conviction. And innocent people, they also get influenced by it. Oh, we have to cook and eat meat. So boasting of their religiosity, such foolish people experience no fear or doubt in cruelly slaughtering innumerable animals in slaughterhouses. So they have no doubt. Pig killing festivals are there, in which entire family enjoys watching a pig cruelly being butchered alive. That is pig killing festival. It's a religious ceremony for them. When a man is raising an animal for slaughter, so what they do is they feed the animal so nicely, and the animal trusts that human being who is feeding him so nicely, and then thinks that he is my master, he is my protector, and starts licking his legs and hands. And the next day, he will kill them. He will kill the animals. So this so-called master is actually death personified. And what exactly is this meat eating? Mamsa bhakshayita mutra yasya mamsam idadmi aham. Etan mamsasya mamsatvam pravadanti manishinah. What is mamsa? The creature whose flesh I am eating today will now assume a human body in the next life and kill me when I assume the form of an animal. Right? Or whatever. He will consume me later. Today I am consuming him. Tomorrow he will consume me. So he gives a promise. Right? Because of my unrestricted desire to gratify my tongue, today I am killing you and eating you. You can do that. You can do the same to me later. That's what Prachina Barhi's example. So Narada Muni tells Prachina Barhi, you killed so many animals. See, he gives a 3D vision to Prachina Barhi. All these animals are waiting to kill you. So thus, meat is called mamsa, as described by learned authorities. Bho bho prajapati rajan. Oh, Prachina Barhi example is quoted here also. Two verses are mentioned. Such punishment of animal killers may take place under the jurisdiction of Yamaraj on the planet of Lord of Death. Punishment of animal killers. Such payment of one's debt by offering one's own body to be eaten is confirmed in Vedic literature. So, debt. Whenever somebody is eating a animal's flesh, he is indebted to that animal. He is obliged to repay that debt by offering his own body. So that will entangle him in several lifetimes. So it's a very dangerous proposal. Dvishanta paragayeshu svatmanam harimishwaram mritakesanubandhesmin baddhasneha patantyadaha.
The conditioned souls become completely bound in affection to their own corpse-like material bodies and their relatives and paraphernalia. In such a proud and foolish condition, the conditioned souls envy other living entities as well as the Supreme Personality of God and Hari, who resides in the heart of all beings. Thus, enviously offending others, the conditioned souls gradually fall down into hell.
So the result of this animal killing and this kind of cruel activities is falling into hell. So materialistic persons express their envy of animals by cruelly killing them. So by doing this, they are only expressing their envy towards God. They are not just expressing envy towards animals, they are expressing envy towards God. By preaching atheistic science or pseudo-philosophy, in which they ridicule the fact that everyone is an eternal servant of God. He is killing another living entity, not acknowledging that living entity's connection with God. He is also part and parcel of Krishna. One day one Christian fellow came to our house, and then he was showing some things. Then I asked him, why do you eat meat? He said, they don't have soul. Who said it? No, he doesn't have much strong argument. Maybe he's a regular person. He may not be a very scholarly person. They don't have soul. We can eat meat. Show me reference. He said, I'll come back with reference later. He never came. But they think that they don't see the connection between Krishna, connection between God, whomever they call, whatever may be the name that they give to God. They don't see the connection between God and living entities. Once I took my mother to a doctor who happened to be a Muslim. Seeing me in dhoti kurta, that he got into a discussion. All his customers are waiting, and 1 hour discussion we were having. And he's a very busy fellow. 2-3 minutes only he gives. Seeing me in dhoti kurta, he just got inspired. He was showing me all our scriptures. He had a big Quran there, and he was also showing me this, Jakir Naik. Jakir Naik's books, they were translated into Telugu. They have all our Vedic aphorisms, right? That Lord does not have a farm, you can eat meat and these kind of things. They collect from different Upanishads, and then they are showing me. From what context you pull this out, right? When I asked him, he knows only, Jakir Naik is his Vedavyas, right? So he doesn't know what Vyasdev has written. He knows only the one line quoted by Jakir Naik. Right? You can eat meat. So meat eating, there was a lot of discussion. And he says, whatever is mentioned in Quran, that is the ultimate thing. That is the final word of God. Whatever is mentioned earlier becomes control that becomes, you need not follow all that. This is the latest updated scripture. You have to follow this only. You cannot follow anything else. So that is his fanatic way of presenting things. So people develop such false convictions. So here it is mentioned that envious persons express their bitter feelings towards other human beings by creating wars, terrorism, cruel governments, and cheating business enterprises. So this terrorism, cruel government, cheating business, all these are just an expression of one's envy towards God. One's envy towards God is reflected as one's envy towards other living entities. And you don't mind torturing them, either in the form of feeding them plastic rice. Now we get some videos. In the rice is made of plastic. It looks exactly like rice. When you cook it, you will realize it's not rice, it's plastic only. And when someone eats plastic, daily he may eat whatever, 100 grams of rice or 200 grams, I don't know how much people will eat. So that much he will eat only plastic, the human beings. And people are just selling it. And in the name of milk, detergent water, right? Detergent water, they process in certain way that it looks like milk and it tastes like milk. It boils like milk. And you can make peda, do whatever, sandesh, everything with that. Right? So milk is, what is that? Surf water. What is it? Detergent water. Rice is plastic. So that is just simple terrorism. That is simple cruelty towards other human beings. You just want some money and you do anything. You don't mind causing any kind of harm to other living beings. And just put some injection to a cow or a goat and buffalo and then extract liters and liters of milk and don't even treat her properly. That is just expression of one's envy towards other living entities. So one's envy towards God is reflected as one's envy towards other living entities. When you come to the devotional circles, one's love towards God is reflected as one's compassion towards other living entities. We are in a totally different realm. We are trying to inculcate a habit and a mood and an attitude which is totally opposite, diametrically opposite to the mood and attitude of Kali Yuga people, a typical Kali Yuga person who is filled with envy towards God and other living entities. What we are aspiring for is an extremely difficult goal. So we need to be extremely careful to keep our mood proper. Once we go in the outside world, in the association of such people who are filled with cruelty, one may think, oh, this is correct, this is okay. What a big deal. Everybody is doing, I will also do. Right? Plastic rice, do some cheating. So the cheating propensity is all pervading. The sinful bodies of such envious persons are just like corpses. Okay. Such envious persons are enamored by the corpse of their material body and become further fascinated by their children and other bodily extensions. Such feelings are based in false pride. Okay, 16th verse. Ye kaivalyam asam prapta. Ye chatitascha mudhatam. Traivargikahya kshanita. Atmanam ghatayantite.
Those who have not achieved knowledge of the absolute truth, yet who are still beyond the darkness of complete ignorance, generally follow the threefold path of pious material life, namely religiosity, economic development, and sense gratification. Not having time to reflect on any higher purpose, they become the killer of their own soul.
They become the killers of their own soul. Hridehamadyam sulabham sudurlabham plavam sukalpam guru karanadharam. What is the next line? Nabhasvate eritam. Very important verse. Uddhava Gita it comes. Oh, you have not yet arrived there. Hridehamadyam sulabham sudurlabham plavam sukalpam guru karanadharam. Mayanukulena nabhasvate eritam. Puman bhavabdhim natareth sa atmaha. Atmaha means killer of soul. So if one has the facility of this human body, which is like a strong boat, and guru karanadharam, if he has a bona fide guru, who is like a karanadhara, captain of the ship, and if also has favorable winds that are actually scriptures, scriptural teachings. So with all these facilities, if he have access to a human body, if you have access to a bona fide guru, and if you have access to the scripture, then there is no other necessity for you. You can directly go back to Godhead. If only we can take advantage of these three things. So all of us have access to this, right? So in spite of having access to these three things, and if one still gets spaced out, then he is called Atmaha, killer of one's own soul. Soul cannot be killed, but the meaning of this Atmaha. Atmanam ghatayantite. He kills his own soul. So, that is like making the soul bereft of its eternal pleasure in Krishna's service. That is what killing the soul means. You cannot kill the soul, definitely. You cannot cut the soul. You cannot burn the soul. You cannot do anything. But here, killer of the soul means just throwing the soul into the transmigration cycle of birth and death. Those who are completely in darkness of ignorance and thus bereft even of material pious life commit innumerable sinful activities and seek and suffer greatly. Those who are not completely sinful experience some mitigation of miseries of material life and thus develop a false sense of well-being within the material world. So whether pious or impious, any activity within this material world is accompanied by sin, right? Entanglement. So there is the conversation between Yamadutas and Vishnudutas. Vishnudutas question the Yamadutas, who is entitled for punishment? Then Yamadutas say, everybody under the control of modes is entitled for punishment. Apparently, he may be doing good activity or bad activity, but ultimately, that activity is done under the control of modes. As long as he is acting under modes, he is entitled for punishment. If someone is doing something under the influence of mode of goodness, he may be doing a pious activity. If he is doing something under the influence of passion and ignorance, he may be doing impious activity. But whether it is impious or pious, it is ultimately a sinful activity because it is done under the influence of modes. What is the best activity, good activity? That which is done beyond the influence of modes. Next, therefore, until we surrender to Krishna, our position is actually impious. The word akshanikaha, not having a moment to reflect, this is an important word. Akshaniha. Akshanika means they are so engrossed in doing all these activities that they don't spare any time to reflect, what am I doing, where am I going. That Mahamurkha story, you know, Mahamurkha, he wants to go, not Mahamurkha, there is another, Prabhupada gives this story where someone just goes fast, but he doesn't know where he is going, right. So, he is going in a car very fast at 120 kmph. Where are you going, sir? I don't know. I have to go fast. Where are you going? I don't know, but I have to go fast. So, they don't have any time to reflect on what they are doing, why they are doing. So, that's why this word akshanika is used, this word. That is a symptom of misfortune. If you don't have time to reflect, introspect the purpose of your life, then that is considered misfortune. So we need to introspect. And if one is so absorbed in services, serving Guru and Krishna, and if he does not have time to reflect, that is actually, in one sense, that is very good. So it is said that one disciple was serving Guru, right? He went to join Gurukul and Guru gave him a service. Daily, you should go to the forest and bring firewood for my sacrifice. The disciple was engaging in that activity every day, day and night. Then one day he realized some hair fell there. Then he took a white hair. Yeah, whose hair is this? Then he realized his own hair. Oh, I have become so old serving my guru. My entire life passed just to get firewood for my guru's sacrifice. Right? My entire life I dedicated to do this one small service to my guru. Good. My life is successful. So without any deviation, he was so absorbed in doing that one simple activity, serving guru. He has perfected his life. So for such a person, if he is not thinking, it's okay. You are absorbed, you are not introspecting or reflecting. You are akshanika because you are absorbed in serving guru. That is good. But if you are absorbed in maya and if you don't have time to reflect, why am I doing, what am I doing, that's a dangerous position. I mean, that doesn't, I'm not discouraging introspection within Krishna consciousness. You should also evaluate yourself. 17. Eta atmahano shanta ajnane jnanamanina sitanchakrita krityavai kaladhvastamanorathah.
The killers of the soul are never peaceful because they consider that human intelligence is ultimately meant for expanding material life. Thus, neglecting their real spiritual duties, they are always in distress. They are filled with great hopes and dreams, but unfortunately, these are always destroyed by the inevitable march of time.
Okay. So, their hopes and dreams are destroyed. Hitvatma maya rachitam grihapatya suhrut striyaham tamo vishanjanichhanto vasudeva paran mukhaham.
Those who have turned away from the Supreme Lord, Vasudev, being under the spell of the Lord's illusory energy, are eventually forced to give up their so-called homes, children, friends, wives and lovers, which were all created by the illusory potential of the Supreme Lord, and enter against their will into the darkest region of the universe.
So they are Vasudeva Paranmukha, Janasya Krishna Vimukhasya Devat. So they have turned their face against Krishna and Vasudeva. So the living entity who turns his back on the Supreme Personality of Godhead and tries instead to enjoy temporary sense gratification. So the result is simply anxiety, as the conditioned soul struggles to maintain his temporary wife, children, friends, home, nation, etc. So finally, these things are taken away, and the bewildered soul in great frustration sometimes tries to take shelter of impersonal conception. Okay. So there is no question of peace and happiness. So Krishna Bhakta Nishkama Ata Eva Shanta. Bhukti Mukti Siddhikami Sakali Ashanta. So there is no peace in one's life if he does not follow the process of Bhakti Yoga, as our scriptures are repeatedly establishing. This is a very heavy section. Things come very in a very straightforward manner. So sometimes we have to go through these kind of sections. But in presenting these sections to new devotees in different forums, we need to be extremely careful and sensitive. Right? So Krishna Katha is relevant to everybody. But the way of presentation should be in such a way that people can accept it. Ultimately, purpose of sharing the scriptural chapters and sections is to inspire one to practice Krishna consciousness. So we need to, while presenting this philosophy to others, we need to have that sensitivity and maturity in presentation. In a Vidyapeeth class where we go chapter by chapter, when we come across these chapters, we can just speak the way they are presented. Honestly, we can speak and discuss and study and write exams. But while presenting, while choosing topics, you need to choose topics relevant to the crowd. Make sense? Yes, Prabhu.
The definition or the reason that's always given is to prove the efficacy of Vedic mantra. This is why the meat-eating sacrifice is there in the Vedas. So it just seems, I mean, I know a lot of people, especially those who are in the more moralistic, ethical circles, vegetarianism, a lot of these people have issue with spiritual traditions or religions that give sanction for animal killing. So if our reason is that it's to test the efficacy of Vedic mantras, couldn't that be done in a different way? It seems quite severe that you have to cut the head of an animal to prove the efficacy. Aren't there other...
So one reason is given, Prabhupada mentions that reason several times, to prove the efficacy of Vedic mantras and also to give a better birth, better body to that animal. That reason is also mentioned. In another place it's mentioned that the animal will enter higher planets. That is also mentioned. So proving the efficacy of Vedic mantras is one of the reasons. Right? Not the only reason.
And then also in terms of, we're hearing the destiny of those who do not accept the principles of Vedic sacrifice. They take birth in degraded places. So in our modern context, also for me, it's a little inconceivable. We see so many people becoming devotees from families that are not very elevated in terms of Vedic. So how we can understand?
Aho bhatas svapajoto gariyo yajjihvagre vartate namatubhyam. Devahuti says, so one may be coming from a low-born family and then unassuming. He may be in some corner of... the planet, right, where you cannot expect someone to become a Krishna conscious devotee, follower of Vedic culture, follower of Brahmanical culture, worshipping Radha and Krishna. You cannot even expect that he will become like that. That is the compassion of a devotee. Prabhupada's compassion. Prabhupada took this Krishna consciousness movement to the Western countries and then inspired all of them and brought them here and inspired people here. So when these are certain protocols that work in a general way, but when a pure devotee's mercy and Krishna's mercy comes, then things happen in a very surprising way, astonishing way. You cannot even think, how can this person get such a mercy? Apparently one may be so spaced out in his practice of Krishna consciousness throughout his life, and at the end of his life, he may leave his body in a glorious way in the presence of so many Vaishnavas doing kirtan on a most auspicious day like Radhashtami in the presence of spiritual master, or it could happen. So we have our understanding of how things should function, but Krishna has his own ways of giving mercy. Vaishnavas have their own ways of empowering people and giving them mercy. We can check our own lives, what was our background, what were our aspirations. I wanted to do PhD. We have different aspirations, and we end up doing something else. How it happened, when we look back, who convinced me? Who tricked me here? You may think so. Yeah, devotee's mercy, bro. Devotee's mercy, Krishna's mercy. That is the explanation.
And just one more question. In terms of slaughterhouse, we see animals. My understanding is the soul enters animal body through the successive evolution. Now we see certain animals, or they're appearing in that animal form and they are getting sent to slaughterhouse. So we're to understand that, like, I'm wondering how the principle of karma affects the animals. Are those animals, that's their karma, that they are going to be killed by someone else? Or even if an animal is hunted or shot, that wasn't his karma. But if he's just progressing evolutionary, and he's not really accruing karma. So that means he must be coming from a human form down like that. Or if you can just comment, because, for example, there's one society in the U.S. called ISCALP, International Society for Cow Protection. It's like one of our only goshals in the U.S. Very wonderful, Balabhadra Prabhu. So they recently rescued two bull calves from the slaughterhouse. So these are beautiful, adorable little calves. But in the slaughterhouse, they're going to sell them for meat. So they went in, they rescued these calves. So I'm just thinking, like, how do we, like, all these calves are going to be sent, does that mean they were in that position before? And it's just a little bewildering.
What was that verse where Krishna says that it is very difficult to understand this karma business? Kim karma kima karmeti Kavayatrapi Mohita. So it's very difficult to understand what an animal is going through, what a human being is going through, who is staying right in front of us also we are figuring out, what karma he is going through, what purification he is going through. So it's difficult to say. At least within my knowledge, I can't comment on that. But devotees are very merciful to rescue cow and then give a new life. Right here in our Goshala, His Holiness Radhana Swami Maharaj mentioned that you need to protect the cows in such a way that not just they get their food or, you know, other maintenance, they live happily till they naturally leave their bodies. We should give them that happy life throughout their life. So here, I don't know what fortune these cows might be having, to be taken care by devotees and their milk is going to Vrindavan Bihari. So they have certain fortune, and some abandoned cows are there, they have certain fortune. I don't know what kind of evolution process they are going through. We don't know. Will they become human beings in the next life, or they have to go through some certain life forms and then come there? When a devotee's mercy comes there, suddenly a jump may happen. Somebody who is in such lower species also can just directly jump to a next higher species. And who are they also, we don't know. Apparently Bharat Maharaj was a deer when he was a deer. In the next birth, deer became a brahmana. So some rasa, some leela was going on between him and Krishna. Because he was diverted from his spiritual practices because of undue compassion towards a deer, Krishna gave him punishment, you become a deer for one lifetime at least. So he became very alert with remembrances of previous life. Then in the next life he became a Brahmana. There an animal became a Brahmana in Bharatmara's case. We don't know in what is the case of other animals, what kind of evolution process they are going through. But when a devotee shows mercy, definitely there is a sudden jump or increment that the living entity gets. So a dog is there passing by, a devotee may give some prasad. The dog is developing, acquiring some ajnata sukriti. And then the evolution that dog goes through is different from an evolution that another dog who may not be accessing devotee's prasadam may go through. Different. Okay. So Hare Krishna. So we'll start this fourth chapter. So we have completed this eighth question and ninth questions from the fifth chapter. So the eighth question was, what is the destination of non-devotees? So Chamashari Rishi explained that there are two categories of people who are actually non-devotees who do not worship the Lord. One is Nabhajanti, other is Avajananti. Those who intentionally disrespect the Lord in spite of knowing about Him. Other category, Nabhajanti is ignorant people who do not know. So those people who do not know, they deserve the mercy of devotees. And the destination of people who do not worship out of arrogance, that is very, that is described in detail. They go to hell, all that. And the clarification about the concessions in the Vedic scriptures, that is also mentioned. Now we will go to fourth chapter, very small section. We will complete it fast before going to the sixth chapter. Ninth verse, right? Seventh verse of fourth chapter. So this is about what are the various pastimes of the various incarnations of Lord. Drumila is explaining about Lord's Purushavataras, Gunavataras, and other Leela Avataras. No, seventh verse. Indro Vishankya Mamadhama Jighrikshateti Kamam Nyayungta Saganam Sabadarshipakhyam Gatvapsaro Ganavasanta Sumandavatai Stri Prekshane Shubhiravidyad Atanmahignya.
King Indra became fearful, thinking that Narayan Rishin would become very powerful by his severe penance and seize Indra's heavenly kingdom. Thus, Indra, not knowing the transcendental glories of the incarnation of the Lord, sent Cupid and his associate to the Lord's resident in Badrikashram. As the charming breezes of a spring created a most sensuous atmosphere, Cupid himself attacked the Lord with arrows in the form of irresistible glance of beautiful women.
So here, in third canto we see, Tat Srishta Srishta Srishtesh Kon Vakhandita Duhipuman Rishim Narayanam Rute Roshit Mayeva Mayaya. So apart from this Narayan Rishi, who else is there in this entire cosmic manifestation who can protect himself from the onslaughts of attraction towards opposite sex? No one is there. And now Cupid is trying to charm that Naranarayan Rishi. Will he be successful? Not at all. Right? That is proved in this pastime. So demigods tried to disturb Naranarayan Rishi. So the word Atan Mahignaha, not understanding the glories of the Lord. Avirya Kovid, Atad Virya Kovidaha, means not understanding Lord's glories. So in the 8th verse, it is said, Vignaya sarka kratama kramam adideva praha prahasya gata vismaya ejamanan ma bhair vibho madana maruta deva vaddho grihnitano balimashunyamimam kurudhum.
The primeval Lord, understanding the offense committed by the Indra, did not become proud. Instead, he spoke laughingly as follows to Cupid and his followers, who were trembling before him. Do not fear, O mighty Madan, O wind god and waves of the demigods. Rather, please accept these gifts I am offering you and kindly sanctify my ashram by your presence.
So, if you remember in the third canto, when Rudra took birth, Brahmaji gave him 11 places of residence. So 11 places of residence are actually where Rudra principle manifests. What is Rudra principle? Anger. So one of the residential places of Rudra, or the residential places of the principle of anger, is austerity. Non-devotional austerity. So when austerity is done without an intent to please the Supreme Lord, then that can induce anger in the practitioner. We have seen Vishwamitra and some other people who became victims of that non-devotional austerity. So here the Supreme Lord is directly performing so many penances, right, austerities. So how can there be anger in such Supreme Lord? Second, how can there be lust in that Supreme Lord? And how can there be pride in that Supreme Lord? When someone is engaged in austerity, he can become angry if his austerity is disturbed. He can become proud if he is successful in doing his austerities. He can become lusty if he's actually distracted from his austerities. But none of these three things will affect the Supreme Lord. So when Cupid came to disturb Naranarayan Rishi, so the Cupid failed. Then Naranarayan Rishi, instead of becoming lusty or angry or proud, he just welcomed Cupid. Oh, you are such exalted demigods. You have come to our ashram. Please come inside, take this seat, take these vegetables, fruits and other things, take our hospitality. It is our great fortune to receive such exalted souls like you. He received them nicely. So that is, Naranarayana was not proud. Gata vismaya. It's very significant. And you should not worry about it. Ma bhaihi means don't worry. So he actually offered nice prasadam and articles of worship. My ashram will be void without the opportunity to receive respectable personalities such as you. That's how Naranarayan Rishi received Cupid and his associates. Similarly, International Society for Krishna Consciousness is establishing beautiful centers at Bombay, London, Paris, Melbourne, Los Angeles, etc. So, but the Vaishnavas who live in these beautiful buildings feel that the buildings are void if guests do not come to hear Krishna Katha and chant holy name. So just like Naranayan Rishi are receiving these guests, similarly, ISKCON residents also should receive. That's what is mentioned. 9th verse. Ittam bhruvatya bhayade nara deva devaham. Savrida marma shirasa sagrinam. Tamuchu Naitadvi Bhotva Yipare Vikrite Vichitram Swarama Dhira Nirana Nikaranta Padya Padme Natapada Padme.
My dear King Nimi, when Naranarayan Rishi thus spoke, Eradicating the fear of the demigods, they bowed their heads with the shame and addressed the Lord as follows, to invoke his compassion. Our dear Lord, you are always transcendental, beyond the reach of illusion, and therefore you are forever changeless. Your causeless compassion towards us, despite our great offense, is not at all unusual in you. Since innumerable great sages who are self-satisfied, free from anger and false pride, bow down humbly at your lotus feet.
So, Cupid is offering prayers. So you are transcendental and beyond the reach of illusion, and your causeless compassion is there upon us despite our great offense. We came actually to distract you, and you are giving us invitation to accept your hospitality. That's very kind of you. Therefore, it is not surprising that we fallible demigods could not appreciate your glories. Although ordinary living entities such as demigods and ordinary men are always disturbed by material pride and anger, you are transcendental. So we are disturbed by material pride and anger, you are not disturbed. So we could not appreciate your glories. Now we are able to appreciate. Tvam sevatam sarakrita bhavatontaraya. Svauko vilanghya paramam vrajatam padam te. Nanyasya barhishi balin dadatas vabhagan. Dhatte padam tvamavita yadi vighna murdhani.
The demigods place many obstacles in the path of those who worship you to transcend the temporary abodes of the demigods and reach your supreme abode. Those who offer the demigods their assigned shares in sacrificial performances encounter no such obstacles, but because you are the direct protector of your devotees, he is able to step over the head of whatever obstacle the demigods place before him.
This is like a connecting verse to the next chapter beginning. So devotees are sometimes disturbed in their devotional practices by demigods. Demigods will come and cause some harm to them, distract them. But devotees will step on the head of those obstacles and then reach the Supreme Lord. The demigods headed by Kamadeva, recognizing their offense at the lotus feet of Personality of Godhead, Naranarayan Rishi, here point out the insignificant position of the demigods in relation to the Supreme Lord. So they are acknowledging Lord's supremacy over them. So maya eva vihitan hitan, although a Vaishnava, a devotee of the Lord, has no need to worship the demigods, the demigods, being proud of their exalted material position, sometimes resent the exclusive devotion of a Vaishnava to the Lord and thus try to cause the devotee to fall down. Surakrita bhavato antaraya. Antaraya means interruption. So Surakrita, all the Suras, demigods, cause some interruption in the activities of devotees. For example, Prithu and Indra, that's also one example you can say, in one sense. So they cannot tolerate others progressing. So demigods said here, we thought, our dear Lord, that we could disturb your consciousness by our foolish tricks. But by your mercy, even your devotees pay little regard to us. We cannot even distract your devotees, what to speak of distracting you. You know that verse? Uddama bhava pishunamala valguhasa vridava lokani hato madanopiyasan sammuhya chapamajahat pramadottamastha yasyendriyam vimathitum kuhakairnasiku. So Cupid comes to, whenever a man and woman come together for uniting, Cupid's role is there. Cupid has to come and induce attraction between them. But when he comes in front of Dwaraka queens and Krishna, Cupid realizes that they are already getting attracted to each other. What is my role here? So the attraction between the queens of Dwaraka and Krishna is not caused by material Cupid. What does it mean? Their relation is not one of material lust, that is pure love. And Lord is not attracted by the feminine attributes of all these queens. he is only attracted by their devotional attitude. So there is no material tinge of lust. So Cupid becomes frustrated and gives up his bow when he comes in front of Krishna, right? So here also he became frustrated in front of Naranarayan Rishi. Kshutratrikala gunamaruta jai vasaishan asman apara jaladhin atitirya kechit krodhasya yanti vifalasya vishampade gor majyanti duschara tapascha vrutotsurajni
Some men practice severe penances to cross beyond our influence, which is like an immeasurable ocean with endless waves of the hunger, thirst, heat, cold, and the other condition brought about by the passing of time, such as sensuous wind and the urges of the tongue and sex organs. Nevertheless, although crossing this ocean of sense gratification through severe penances, such person foolishly drawn in a cow's hoofprint when conquered by useless anger. Thus they exhaust the benefit of their difficult austerities in vain.
So even our Dinbandhu Prabhu, when he came and he was giving this Vrindavan tour, Parikrama, he was saying, I have seen so many sadhus who are so self-controlled, who control their desires of senses, but they could not control anger. They become so angry. So all these sages who perform austerities for thousands of years, so they must have gained control over so many things, but they become victim of anger. So that's what he is also saying. Kshutratrikala gunamaruta jaihva saishnan. So all these urges they could control. Right? They will cross beyond the influence of demigods also, but they fall victim to useless anger and they don't achieve enjoyment or liberation, both. So anger is such a very detrimental thing for one's devotional progress. In anger, one forgets everything. Prabhupada writes like this in Daksha's episode. Daksha, because of his anger, he forgot that he is in a sacrificial arena where all prajapatis and great sages have assembled. He forgot that he was speaking to Brahma. He was becoming sarcastic that Brahma, this Parameshti, he told to give my daughter to the Shiva, monkey-eyed Shiva. Right? I have given. I am not at all favorable to this decision. So he criticized. And so many people were pleading him, don't go. And he just left. So anger makes one forgetful of everything. Anger makes one so helpless. So people who have controlled their senses and did austerities, they also become victims of anger. Those engaged in sense gratification are easily conquered with the demigods through various weapons such as hunger, thirst, sexual desire, lamentation, etc. Such materialistic fools, infatuated with material world, are easily controlled by demigods. But persons who attempt to subdue the desires of material senses and thus avoid control of demigods, without surrendering to the Supreme Lord, are even more foolish than sense gratifiers, because they become victims of their own anger. So that is a big obstacle. Thus, anger gives neither liberation nor material sense gratification, but merely burns up the results of one's material penances and austerities. The only result of anger is burning up one's devotional credits, penance, austerity credits. However, when someone is angry within the realm of devotional service, that is called transcendental anger. Hanuman became angry on Ravan. Arjun became angry on some Kurukshetra, Kaurava warriors. So that is anger that is dovetailed in Krishna's service is beneficial. But anger that is appearing because one's desires are frustrated, that is detrimental. What is that? Jhayato vishyan pumsam sangasthesho bajayate, sangat sanjayate kama, kama krodha bijayate, krodhat bhavati sammoha, kamat krodho bijayate, So when desires are not fulfilled, one becomes angry. And one becomes angry, krodhat bhavati sammoha. Sammoha smriti vibhramaha. Sruti brahmsa buddhinasho. Buddhinasha pranashyati. So the whole series Krishna describes. Dambhodarpo abhimanascha krodha parushyamevaja. Ajnanam cha abhijatascha parthaha sampadamashvati. So behind one's expression of krodha, a lot of process has happened within him. Dambha. Because of dambha, darpa comes. Because of darpa, abhimana. Then krodha. Then parushya. So parushya means harsh speech. Behind harsh speech, there is krodha, anger. Behind krodha, abhimana. Right? One's identification is there. So behind that, dambha, darpa are there. Deceit and pride, all these are there. So the ultimate manifestation is harsh speech. Like that. With anger. Iti pragrinitam tesham. Striyotyadbhuta darshanah. Darshayamasa susrunam. Svarchitah kurvatir vibhu.
While the demigods were thus praising the Supreme Lord, the all-powerful Lord suddenly manifested before their eyes many women who were astonishingly gorgeous, decorated with fine clothes and ornaments, and all faithfully engaging in the Lord's service.
Yeah, read the translations. It's all storyline.
When the followers of the demigod gazed the fascinating mystic beauty of the women created by Narnara and the sea, and smelled the fragrance of their bodies, the minds of these followers became bewildered. Indeed, upon seeing the beauty and magnificence of such women, the representatives of the demigods were completely diminished in their own opulence.
Instead of getting attracted or distracted by the woman accompanying Cupid, Lord himself created so many women. So that is his speciality. See this one, this image. This chapter. Yeah, read.
The Supreme Lord of Lords then smiled slightly and told the representatives of heaven who were bowing down before him, please choose one of these women, whomever you find suitable for you. She will become the ornament of the heavenly planets.
So the demigods were thinking that we are simply low-class fools in comparison with these women. Lord is encouraging them. You choose one of them, you take, no problem. So whomever you consider like equal in character to yourself, you can take. Right? She will become the ornament of your heavenly planets. They took Urvasi. Read.
Vibrating the sacred syllable Om, the servants of demigod selected Urvasi, the best of the Apsaras. Placing her in front of them out of respect, they returned to the heavenly planets.
Next.
The servants of the demigods reached the assembly of Indra, and thus, while all the residents of the three heavens listened, they explained to Indra the supreme power of Narayan. When Indra heard of Narayan Rishi and became aware of his offense, he was both frightened and astonished.
He was frightened and astonished. Now, from next verse onwards, you will see more Leela Avataras, list of incarnations. Read.
The infallible Supreme Personality of Godhead Vishnu had descended into this world by his various partial incarnations, such as Lord Hams.
Hamsa comes in the 11th canto.
Dattatre, the four Kumaras, and our own father, the mighty Rishabdev. By such incarnations, the Lord teaches the science of self-realization for the benefit of the whole universe. In his appearance as a high griva, he killed the demon Madhu and thus brought the Vedas back from the hellish planet Pataloka.
Next.
In his appearance as a fish, the Lord protected Satyavrata Manu, the earth and her valuable herbs. He protected them from the waters of annihilation. As a boar, the Lord killed Hiranyaksha, the son of Diti, while delivering the earth from the universal waters. And as a tortoise, he lifted Mandara mountain on his back so that nectar could be churned from the ocean. The Lord saved the surrendered king of the elephants, Gajendra, who was suffering terrible distress from the grips of a crocodile.
Eighth canto. Next.
The Lord also delivered the tiny ascetic sages called the Vaikhalyas.
Valkhilyas.
When they fell into the water in a cow's hoofprint, and Indra was laughing at them. The Lord then saved Indra when Indra was covered by darkness due to the sinful reaction for killing Vritrasur. When the wives of the demigods were trapped in the palace of the demons without any shelter, the Lord saved them. In his incarnation as Narasimhadev, the Lord killed Hiranyakashipu, the king of demons, to free the saintly devotee from fear.
Next.
The Supreme Lord regularly takes advantage of the wars between the demons and demigods to kill the leaders of the demons. The Lord thus encourages the demigods by protecting the universe through his various incarnations during the reign of Ichmanu. The Lord also appeared as Vaman and took the earth away from Bali Maharaj on the plea of begging 3 steps of land. The Lord then returned the entire world to the son of Aditi. The Lord Parashuram appeared in the family of Bhrigu as a fire that burned to ashes the dynasty of Haihai. Thus Lord Parashuram rid the earth of all Kshatriyas 21 times. The same Lord appeared as Ramchandra, the husband of Sita Devi, and thus he killed the 10-headed Ravana along with all the soldiers of Lanka. May that Shri Ram, whose glories destroy the contamination of the world, be always victorious.
So it is said that Ramachandra is a contemporary incarnation, like Navayogendra's only. Thus they have offered particular respect to Ramachandra. Jayati. Next. Sita Patir Jayati Loka Mahagna Kirti. Mahagna Kirti. Malagna Kirti. Loka Malagna. Okay.
To diminish the burden of the earth, the unborn Lord will take birth in the Yadu dynasty and perform feats impossible even for the demigods.
Will take birth. That is future incarnation, Krishna.
Propounding speculative philosophy, the Lord, as Buddha, will bewilder the unworthy performers of Vedic sacrifices. And as a Kalki, the Lord will kill all the low-class men posing as rulers at the end of the age of Kali.
So that is the 4th chapter. Now we will begin our 6th chapter.
O mighty armed king, there are innumerable appearances and activities of the Supreme Lord of the universe similar to those I have already mentioned. In fact, the glories of the Supreme Lord are unlimited.
So this... Mostly it is singular. They're always together. Initially I was also confused, they are one or two. The way they were addressed several times, Narayana and Rishi. Hardly they are addressed as Narayana and Rishis. I also don't know why they are addressed like that. Because they are always together. They are presented like that. That's all I know. But they are two personalities. When we have BBT paintings also, there are two personalities. Some say so, but Dattatreya is his realizations. We will know from the 7th chapter. 24 Gurus episode. Right, he is an incarnation of Vishnu directly. He is the son of Atri and Anasuya. Right, impersonalistic philosophy, bro, where is the reference for it? I also heard some. I don't know much. Only thing is 24 Gurus episode is like Dattatreya's realizations. I don't know beyond that. So, sixth chapter. Now, in the first five chapters of 11th canto, we saw the discussion between Navayogendras and Nimi. The first chapter is actually a prelude to Krishna's disappearance first time. And we also read about several explanations about the Moshali Leela from the Acharyas. Now, second chapter till fifth chapter, they describe the teachings of Navayogendras to Nimi. Now, in the sixth chapter, we see the next episode. 11th canto is just a continuation of 10th canto, Krishna's pastimes. But 11th canto majorly deals with the disappearance of Krishna, disappearance of Yadus. The first chapter is a prelude to the disappearance episode, Moshali Leela. The next four chapters are a discussion between Vasudeva and Narada Muni. The context was Vasudeva was overwhelmed that Krishna is going to depart. So Narada Muni came and then quoted the teachings of Bhagavad Dharma as spoken by Navayogendras. Then sixth chapter discusses the arrival of demigods to inform Krishna that the purpose for which you have descended has been fulfilled. Now if you desire, you may depart. So that is the subject matter of sixth chapter. Then Krishna actually departs. Then Uddhava becomes overwhelmed by feelings of separation. He goes and takes shelter of Krishna and says, please take me along with you. Then Krishna says, you are as good as me. You are supposed to be my representative. I have given my association to so many people. When I am here, I went to Hastinapur, then Dwaraka, Vrindavan, Mathura, and all these devotees were benefited by me. But I could never go to Badrikashram and give my association to the sages. My dear Uddhava, you have to go and do that job on my behalf after my disappearance. Then to pacify Uddhava, Krishna speaks 23 chapters of philosophy, Uddhava Gita. Beginning from 7th chapter till 29th chapter is a conversation between Krishna and Uddhava, which is popularly called as Uddhava Gita. Then 30th and 31st chapter actually will describe the disappearance of Yadus and disappearance of Krishna. This is 11th canto. Okay. Now we'll read the 6th chapter. Sri Shuka Uvacha. Ata Brahmatmajai Devaihi. Prajeshair Avrito Bhyagat. Bhavascha Bhuta Bhavyesho. Yayau Bhuta Ganair Vrataham.
Sri Sukadeva Goswami said, Lord Brahma then set off for Dwaraka, accompanied by his own sons as well as by the demigods and the great Prajapatis. Lord Shiva, the bestower of auspiciousness to all living beings, also went, surrounded by many ghostly creatures.
So many demigods, Brahma, Shiva, Prajapatis, all of them went to Dwaraka to meet Krishna. And what happened there? Gandharvapsaraso nagah. Indro marudbhir bhagavan. Aditya vasavo shivnau. Ribhavongi raso rudra. Vishvesadhyascha devatah. Gandharvapsaraso nagah. Siddhacharana guhyakah. Rishayah pitarascheiva. Savidyadhara kinnarah. Dwarakam upasang jagmu. Sarve Krishna didrikshavah. Vapushayena Bhagavan. Naraloka manorama. Yashovitene lokeshu. Sarvaloka malapaham.
The powerful Lord Indra, along with the Maruts, Adityas, Vasus, Ashvinis, Rubus, Angiras, Rudras, Vishvedevas, sadhyas, gandharvas, apsaras, nagas, siddhas, charans, guhyakas, the great sages and forefathers and the vidyadhars and kinnars arrived at the city of Dwarka hoping to see Lord Krishna. By his transcendental form, Krishna, the Supreme Lord, enchanted all human beings and spread his own fame throughout the worlds. The Lord's glories destroy all contamination within the universe.
So many personalities who arrived at Dwarka are mentioned. Gandharva, Apsara, Naga, Siddha, Charana, Guhyaka. Dwarakam upasang jagmuhu. All of them came to Dwarka. Sarve Krishna didrikshavaha. All of them are very eager to see Krishna. Darshanam no didrikshunam dehi bhagavatarchitam. Didrikshuna means being eager to see Krishna. They were very eager. Vapusha yena bhagavan naraloka manoramaha. Naraloka manoramaha. So Krishna is so enchanting, right, to all human beings. Supreme Lord enchanted all human beings. And yasho vitene lokeshu. And the Supreme Lord, Krishna, enchanted all human beings and spread his own fame throughout the worlds. Yasho vitene lokeshu. And what is the effect of such spreading of glory? Last line. Sarva loka malapaham. So all the mala, contamination of all the planets is removed when Krishna's glories are spread. So all of them became very eager to see Krishna who descended like that. And why would Krishna descend in this planet? Although there are so many loving associates of Krishna in the spiritual world, he is being served so lovingly, without any force, without any schedules, without any compulsion. They were serving Krishna voluntarily, still he descends. One of the reasons is to assist all the demigods in the cosmic management. So it is Krishna only who employed all the demigods to manage various affairs of this universal administrative system. And when they are finding it difficult to administer, difficult to manage the affairs of this universe because of some imbalance or distraction created by the demons, Lord himself descends to assist them. That is the purpose of Krishna's descent in relation to assisting the demigods. In relation to the devotees, paritranaya sadhunam. In relation to the demons, vinayashacha dushkrutam. In relation to dharma, to re-establish dharma, dharma samsthapanarthaya. In relation to all the loving associates of Krishna, raga marga bhakti pracharan prema rasa kurite aswadan. So Krishna wants to relish the nectarian mellows of his pastimes with his dear devotees. When Krishna descends, there are so many purposes that he fulfills. We have this problem, optimization problems, you know, maximize something subject to this condition, minimize something subject to these conditions. So similarly, when Krishna does, Krishna descends, he solves a multi-constrained optimization problem. So he can, in one descent, he can satisfy so many parties, right? Like that. Now here, the personality of Godhead descends within the material world to assist the demigods in cosmic management. However, here it is indicated that although accustomed to seeing various Vishnu expansions of the Lord, the demigods were especially eager to see this most beautiful form of Krishna. Right? Sarve Krishna didrikshavaha. Krishna appeared in so many incarnations, but here they are having very specific eagerness, special eagerness to see Krishna, who is the source of all incarnations. Tasyam vibhrajamanayam samriddhayam mahardhimi vyachakshata vitrupaksha krishnam adbhuta darshanam.
In that resplendent city of Dwarka, rich with all spiritual opulences, the demigods beheld with unsatiated eyes the wonderful form of Sri Krishna.
Vyachakshata means dissa. Avitripta akshaha, their eyes were not satisfied by seeing Krishna. Means they want to see more, right? Just to appreciate Krishna's beauty in one angle itself will take lifetimes. And Krishna is directly standing there. How many eyes one may need? And lot of appetite they had to have Krishna's darshan, and yet it was not getting fulfilled only. Avitripta akshaha. Krishnam adbhuta darshanam. So Krishna's beautiful form is very wonderful to see. That's why their eyes are not satiated. Nityam nirikshamananam yadyapidvara kokosam na vitrupyanti hidrishah shriyo dhamangam achyutam. Even Dwarkavasis, they were seeing Krishna daily. Still, they were not satisfied. Because Lord's body is the abode of all opulences. Shriyo dhamangam achyutam. Achyuta's anga is the dhama of all shriya.
Sarvagodhyanopagairmalyai
Chhadayanto yaduttamam Girbhischitrapadarthabhi Tushtuvar Jagadishwaram.
The demigods covered the Supreme Lord of the universe with flower garlands brought from the gardens of heaven. Then they praised him, the best of the Yadu dynasty, with statements containing charming words and ideas.
Demigods covered with flower garlands. When they are coming from heavenly planets, they got some garlands from there. They actually remain fresh. But compared to what Krishna wears in Vrindavan and Dwaraka, these garlands from heavenly planets are nothing. Later demigods also say, although you are Krishna, although you are so opulent, although you have access to such wonderful paraphernalia, you have accepted our withered garland. Right? Sukh gaya hamara garland. In front of the garlands that you wear. So the demigods, in a joking manner, they say like that. Naumidyate bravabushe taditambaraya gunjavatamsa paripichala sanmukhaya vanyasraje kavalavetra vishanavenu lakshmasriye mridupade pasupangajaya. Vanyasraje. So he wears a garland of forest flowers. What is the other verse? Vaijayantim chamalam barhapidam natavaravapu karnayor karnikaram vibhradvasa kanaka kapisham vaijayantim chamalam. So Vaijayanti garland is a garland made of five kinds of forest flowers which are available in Vrindavan. So Krishna wears such kind of opulent garlands, and the garlands or the flowers available in heavenly planets, let them be Parijata or whatever, they are nothing in comparison to the garlands available in Vrindavan or Dwaraka. So apparently Parijata is brought from heavenly planets to Dwaraka. But that is the fortune of Parijata flower, not the fortune of Dwaraka. It is the fortune of Parijata flower that Krishna went and picked it up. Otherwise, Krishna is happy with his Vaijayantim Jamalam. Now they are offering prayers. Sri Deva Uchuhu Natasmate Natha Padaravindam Buddhindriya Pranamano Vachobhi Yachintyatentar hriti bhava yuktair Mumukshubhir karma mayoru pashat.
The demigods begin to speak. Our dear Lord, advanced mystic yogis striving for liberation from the severe bondage of the material work meditate with great devotion upon your lotus feet within the earth, dedicating our intelligence, senses, vital air, mind, and power of speech to your lordship. We demigods bow down at your lotus feet.
So, all the liberation seekers meditate on Lord's lotus feet. Even Dwarkavasis also prayed in a similar way in the first canto. నతాస్మతేనాథ సదాంఘ్రి పంకజం విరించ వైరించ సురేంద్ర వందితం పరాయణం క్షేమమిహేచ్ఛతాం పరం నయత్ర కాల ప్రభవేత్ పర ప్రభు. సో ఇట్స్ అవర్ ఫార్చ్యూన్ దట్ వీఆర్ ఏబుల్ టు ఆఫర్ ఒబేసెన్సెస్ టు యూ. వన్ హూ డిజైర్స్ సమ్ వెల్ఫేర్ ఇన్ దిస్ వరల్డ్ ఫర్ హిమ్సెల్ఫ్, హీ హ్యాస్ టు టేక్ షెల్టర్ ఆఫ్ యువర్ లోటస్ ఫీట్. Because you are not influenced by the power of time, you can protect us from the onslaughts of time factor. So for our own welfare, we have to take your shelter. Natasmate natha padaravindam buddhindriya prana mano vachobhi. So with their buddhi, indriya, prana, mana, vacha, means body, mind, word, senses and life. So one has to take shelter of Krishna. So yogis take shelter like that. Ya chintaye antar hridi bhava yuktair. Yogis meditate upon the Supreme Lord, antar hridi, within their hearts, bhava yuktair, with lot of emotion and feelings. Mumukshubhir karma mayor upashat. And mumukshubhir means they are desiring their liberation. Right, striving for liberation. So karma maya urupashat. Urupashad means very strong knot, bondage. Right? What is that bondage? Karma. To get relieved from the strong bondage of karma, seekers of liberation meditate on your lotus feet with their buddhi, indriya, prana, mano, vachobhi. That is the meaning of this verse. Right? Yat chintaye antar hridi bhava yuktair. So, according to Sridhar Swami, the word sma indicates vismaya, astonishment. The demigods were astonished that although great mystic yogis are only able to contemplate the lotus feet of the Lord within their hearts, here demigods are directly seeing the entire form of Krishna. They are actually comparing their fortune with yogis' fortune. What do yogis do? Yogis do yat chintaye antar hridi bhava yuktair. With bhava, within their hearts, they meditate on your lotus feet because they aspire for salvation. But we are more fortunate than those yogis because we are not meditating on you just within our hearts. We are directly seeing you. Seeing the form of Krishna directly is considered more fortunate than meditating on him within the heart. That's why our Satyavrata Muni prays, ఇదం తేవ పుర్నాథ గోపాల బాలం సదామే మనస్యా విరాస్తం కిమన్యై. లెట్ దిస్ బ్యూటిఫుల్ ఫార్మ్ ఆఫ్ బాల గోపాల్ బి మేనిఫెస్ట్ ఇన్ మై హార్ట్ ఆల్వేస్. బట్ ఇన్ ద నెక్స్ట్ ప్రేయర్ హి సేస్, నమో దేవ దామోదర అనంత విష్ణు ప్రసీద ప్రభో దుఃఖజాలాబ్ధిమగ్నం కృపాదృష్టి వృష్ట్యాతి దీనం బతాను గృహాణేశ మామగ్నం ఏది అక్షిదృశ్యై. ఈ సేస్ అక్షిదృశ్యై, యూ బీ విజిబుల్ టు మై ఐస్. ఇన్ ద ప్రీవియస్ వర్సెస్ ఈ సెడ్ యూ మేనిఫెస్ట్ ఇన్ మై హార్ట్, బట్ వై మేనిఫెస్ట్ ఇన్ హార్ట్? యూ షుడ్ బి సీన్ డైరెక్ట్లీ ఇన్ ఫ్రంట్ ఆఫ్ అవర్ ఐస్. సో ప్లీజ్ మేనిఫెస్ట్ ఇన్ ఫ్రంట్ ఆఫ్ మై ఐస్. ధ్రువ మహారాజ్ వాజ్ మెడిటేటింగ్ ఆన్ కృష్ణ విత్ ఇన్ హిస్ హార్ట్. దెన్ కృష్ణ ఇమీడియట్లీ విత్డ్రూ దట్ ఫార్మ్. దెన్ హీ వాజ్ పర్టర్బ్డ్, వెరీ సీ, వెరీ సీ. దెన్ హీ ఓపెన్ హిస్ ఐస్, హీ సా the Lord along with Garuda standing in front of him. That is considered more mercy than just manifesting in heart. So Bhagavan realization is more advanced than Paramatma realization, because Paramatma stays in the heart, Bhagavan stays in front of eyes. So the demigods were astonished. They were able to see entire body of the Lord. This is called Dandavat. Such full obeisances are called Dandavat, are described here. The definition of Dandavat is given here. Dorbhyam padabhyam janubhyam urasa shirasa drisha manasa vachasa cheti pranamo ashtanga shashtanga iritaha. So when eight limbs of one's body touch the ground, it is called Dandavat. What are the eight limbs? Dorbhyam, one's arms, padbhyam, padabhyam, that is legs, janubhyam, knees, urasa, chest, sirasa, head, drisha, eyes, then mind, and vachasa, power of speech. All these eight should touch the ground. Then only it is called dandavat. So we can try to memorize this verse. The currents of material nature are very powerful, and one should therefore cling tightly to the lotus feet of the Lord. Otherwise, the violent waves of sense gratification and mental speculation will undoubtedly sweep one away from one's eternal constitutional position as a loving servitor of the Lord. That's why this word comes, Urupashad. Mumukshubhir karma mayorupashad. Urupashad means very tight knot of bondage. And that bondage can come by sense gratification or mental speculation. That is karma jnana. Jnana karmadi anavritam. Right? Yes, Prabhu, you had some point.
Is there any injunction? Like one time I heard that the elbows should also be in order to get the benefit of offering obeisances. So I'm just getting a little, sometimes my mind is unsure. Like, is there a requirement? Is it more about just your mood? Or that should be followed?
Offer the dandavats. And we generally do it keeping the deities to the left side. And what exactly is the question? You should only the mood or just physically also you have to do.
Like according to Panchu Chiriki, I heard that the elbows have to touch the ground and the hands, like these different limbs, but in our Vaishnava culture, if I see a Vaishnava, is there any like rules like that or just showing going
through the ground? So here in this verse if you see Dorbhyam, Padabhyam, Janubhyam, Urasa, Sirasa, Drisha. So first six are like physical limbs. Then Manasa, Vachasa, Cheti. Your mind also touch. Your power of speech also should touch. Means you should say Jai, Radha Vrindavan Bihari ki Jai, Gauranga Mahaprabhu ki Jai, Giriraj ki Jai. So with your words, one is glorifying the Lord. With your mind, you are thinking about the Lord. So it's actually the mood also and the physical action also. So when you say dandavat, that is accompanied by a mood of humility and surrender. At the same time, a physical gesture is also there. But if someone has some back pain, he cannot offer so many obeisances, he has to be practical. Then manasa vachasa may be sufficient. Right? Maybe one dandavat is sufficient for him in a day. But depending on his physical condition. But it's mood and physical gesture also. Morning they offer water to Tulsi, na? So when other Vaishnavas are not offering dandavat, when some Tulsi bush is there or some Giriraj Shila is there or some deities are there, we are no one to comment or say anything about that. And if I have that mood, I can just go and offer obeisances. Somebody said busy, he has to go to an ashram. Maybe he's just going towards the ashram and then he may be passing Govardhan and Vrindavan forest. You may not be seeing him going to every seven temples and then offering dandavats, although he's passing through them. But someone may be going through all seven temples and offering dandavats. Maybe someone will just offer one dandavat to enter Vrindavan. So the different devotees can set their own standards and then what, how they can follow. Right? So it's ultimately the consciousness. Right? Okay. Then, 8th verse. Tvam mayaya trigunayatmani durvibhavyam vyaktam srujasya vasilum patitat gunastha naiter bhavan ajitakarma bhirajyate vai yat sve sukhe vyavahite bhiratona vadyah
yat sve sukhe
unconquerable Lord, you engage your illusory energy, composed of three modes, to unleash, maintain and devastate the inconceivable manifest cosmos, all within your own self, as the supreme superintendent of Maya. You appear to be situated in the interaction of the modes of nature. However, you are never affected by material activities. In fact, you are directly engaged in your own eternal spiritual bliss, and thus you cannot be accused of any material infection.
This is another beautiful verse that is similar to Etad Ishanamesha Prakriti Sthopitad Gunaihi Na Yujyate Sadatmasthair Yatha Buddhi Tadashraya. Although the Lord performs so many activities in His dealings with matter, He is not affected by those dealings. Here also, Tvam Mayaya Trigunayatmani Durvibhavyam. Durvibhavyam means you cannot, Vibhavaya means you cannot conceive of Him. Yadyadhyata Urugaya Vibhavayanti. In their bhava, they are able to conceive of certain form of the Lord, that is called Vibhavayanti. When you say Lord is Durvibhavyam, it is very difficult to conceive of the Lord's activities or forms and many other things, attributes. Lord is Durvibhavyam. Tvam Mayaya Trigunayatmani. By your Maya, your material energy, which is Trigunayatmani, which is consisting of three modes, what you do? Vyaktam Srijasi Avasi Lumpasi Tadgunastaha. You create this material world, you maintain this material world, and to annihilate this material world. All this you do with your gunas, right? With your qualities of material nature. But naitair bhavan ajita karma bhir ajyate vai. Although you do all these activities, still you are not at all entangled by them. You stay aloof from all these activities. Yat sve sukhe vyavahite bhirato anavadyaha. Anavadyaha, O Lord of impeachable character, you are not at all affected by your dealings with matter. Right? You are sve sukhe vyavahite abhirato. You are completely absorbed in your avyavahite, unimpeded absorption in your happiness. Sve sukhe. You take pleasure in your own self, and that pleasure is not interrupted. Avyavahita. Avyavahita means not at all impeded. So Lord is absorbed in His own samadhi, in His own happiness. But He also does all these things, material activities. Similarly, devotee is also, he is absorbed in his Krishna consciousness. Morning Madhav Gopal Prabhu is wonderfully describing in his Bhagavatam class. So devotee is absorbed in his Krishna consciousness. Right? Our the fire with which we cook an item, right? It is a fire that allows us to cook some item. Whatever activities that we are doing in the realm of devotional service, that is like cooking. But the fire is our intention to serve Krishna, our mood, our consciousness to serve Krishna. Beautiful analogy He was giving. So when that kind of fire is maintained, then devotee, although he is dealing with matter, he is dealing with money, he is dealing with resources, he is dealing with manpower, he's dealing with so many other gadgets and other things, but he's not entangled in them, provided his consciousness is rooted in service to Krishna. Otherwise, the current of material nature will just sway him away from the process of devotional service. If he's distracted by some temporary benefits that he's getting by his practice of devotional service. By practicing devotional service, one may become popular, he may get name or fame or facilities or so many other things. But if he is not rooted in his mood of servitude and submissiveness towards Krishna's will, if he is not rooted in his regulative practices of sadhana, right, chanting, hearing, studying, Bhagavatam, sound vibration, etc., he will be swayed away. Right? So, just like Lord is unaffected by his dealings with matter, one who takes exclusive shelter of the Lord is also unaffected by his dealings with matter. So that is the point here. Anavadya, unimpeachable Lord. Now, Lord is, by his maya, by his guna, tad gunastaha, only by the the qualities of material nature, this material world is functioning. But Lord is not materially ignorant. Therefore, he never exhibits cruelty, laziness, foolishness, blindness, etc. Lord is never materially passionate. So, he never exhibits pride, lamentation, violence, etc. Lord is never materially, in material mode of goodness also. So, he never attempts to peacefully enjoy this material world. So, all these are qualities of material goodness, passion and ignorance. Because Lord is beyond the modes of matter, he is beyond this kind of feelings, these kinds of tendencies. So that is mentioned. Sve sukhe vyavahite abhirataha. He is eternally blissful in the spiritual world, in his transcendental abode. The pastimes in Krishna Loka and on other Vaikuntha planets are eternal, faultless, and an ocean of spiritual happiness. The Lord never descends to the dry platform of relative material happiness. That is the eighth verse. That is clear. First verse they said, we just want to take shelter of your lotus feet. Even yogis only meditate on your lotus feet with their body, mind, words, prana, etc. But we are able to see your entire form. We are very fortunate. Now, eighth verse they said, because of your maya, this whole material world is functioning, but you are unaffected, you are aloof. Now, ninth verse. Shuddhirnam natu tadeyadya durashayanam vidyashrutadhyayanadana tapakriyabhi Sattvatmanam Rishabhate Yashasi Pravriddha Shashraddhaya Shravana Sambhritaya Yathasyat Shuddhirnranam Natutade Jaturashayanam Shuddhirnranam Natutade Jaturashayanam Vidyasrutadhyayanadana tapah kriyadvi Sattvatmanam Rishabhate Yashasi Pravriddha Satshraddhaya Shravana Sambhritaya Yathasyat.
O greatest of all, those whose consciousness is polluted by illusion cannot purify themselves merely by ordinary worship, study of the Vedas, charity, austerity, and ritual activities. O our Lord, those pure souls who have developed a powerful transcendental faith in your glories achieve a purified state of existence that can never be attained by those lacking such faith.
Shuddhir nranam natu tadedya durashayanam. This is a very instructive verse for all the students of Bhagavatam. Durashayana means pride. Specifically, one's consciousness when it is contaminated by pride. Durashayana, basically consciousness, contaminated consciousness. So, that contaminated consciousness cannot be purified by vidya, shruta, adhyayana, dana, tapah, kriya, etc. Right? Vidya means education, or here ordinary worship they say. Shruta, by hearing or obeying instructions of Vedas. Adhyayana, studying shastras. Dana, charity. Tapah, austerities. Kriyadhi means ritualistic activities. So all these things cannot purify one's polluted consciousness at all. So just by following the certain rituals and then study, etc., one cannot purify. Sattvatmanam rishabhaye yashashi pravruddha sat shraddhaya shravana sambhritaya yathasyat. How can that be purified? those pure souls who have developed a powerful transcendental faith in your glories, sat shraddhaya shravana sambhritaya, if you develop transcendental faith in the glories of the Lord, then one can purify oneself. Polluted consciousness of the human being cannot be purified by rituals and study and charity, etc., austerities. It can be purified by faith in Krishna's glories. I can purify myself by constantly coming in contact with Krishna's glories, nourishing myself, nourishing my inner self with Krishna's glories. That will remind me of my lost connection with Krishna. That will inspire me to revive my relationship with Krishna. By being constantly in touch with Krishna's glories, I can purify my polluted consciousness. Keeping aside Krishna's glories just by following the conventional practices of charity, austerity, study, etc., etc., that doesn't work. Right. Shravana Sambhritaya, which is reinforced by process of hearing, yathasyat. And that hearing Krishna Katha should be accompanied with faith. When Bhagavatam is making one statement, we need to evaluate ourselves. How much faith do I have on this statement? Right? Do I believe this promise given by Bhagavatam? Bhagavatam says, Pibantiye Bhagavata Atmanasatam Kathamrutam Shravana Puteshu Sambhritam Punantite Vishaya Vidushita Asayam. I will purify the polluted aspirations of your life, Bhagavatam is promising. Do we have sufficient belief, faith on that statement of Bhagavatam? Or we secretly disbelieve the statement of Bhagavatam and keep our faith on something else? I have so many other aspirations, how do I purify them? Just nourish yourself with sound vibration. Here it says, Shuddhir Nranam Natu Tadedya Durashayanam. Durashaya means wrong aspirations. Aspirations that are filled with pride. Aspirations that are polluted and contaminated. And that pollution can be removed by Bhagavatam. Right? If only we have faith. That faith is an important word. Shraddhaya, Sat Shraddhaya, Shravana Sambhritaya, Yathasyat. So only by that Shravanam. So Shravanam also accompanies following also. You can't just, okay, Shravana Sambhriti, I'll just hear here. Hearing should follow following. What is that verse? Brahmaji says. Brahma tells Priyavrata, Natasya kaschit tapasa vidyayava na yoga viriyana manishayava naivartha dharmaihi paratasvatova kritam vihantam tanubhrit vibhuyat. So, by no means, some of the means are mentioned here also, by one's tapasa, vidya, yoga, virya, manisha, etc., one cannot deny the orders of Lord. When you say sravanam, what are you hearing? You are hearing the instructions of Krishna which are recorded in Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam. So one has to have an inclination to follow them sincerely also. Then the purification of polluted consciousness will happen. So, even if a pure devotee is lacking the above qualifications, such as Vedic study and austerity, if he has unflinching faith in Lord Krishna, that Lord Krishna will save him because of his devotion. Then, on the other hand, if one becomes falsely proud of one's material qualifications, including ordinary piety, but does not devote himself to hearing and chanting the glories of Krishna, the result will be nil. Like that. Even by hearing about Krishna, one achieves all perfection. But they had entered the Lord's own city and were seeing him standing before him. Now, demigod's fortune is that just by hearing about you, one will be purified. What to speak of directly interacting with you and seeing you. So they were mentioning their fortune. Right. Yesterday also we discussed. Manye dhana abhijana rupa tapasrutoja teja prabhava balapaurusha buddhi yoga naradhanaya hi bhavanti parasya pumsam bhaktya tutosha bhagavan gajayutapaya. So dhana abhijana rupa tapasruta oja, all this will not be sufficient to please the Lord, only Bhakti Yoga. And the prominent limb of Bhakti Yoga is Shravana. Shravana Samhrtaya. So, something is said about purifying one's consciousness, purifying one's aspirations is mentioned here. The next verse says that Lord acts like the purifier. If you hear, who will purify you? Lord will purify you. Pravishta karna randhrena svanam bhava saroruham dhunwati shamalam krishna salilasya yathasarat. Krishna, in the form of sound vibration of Bhagavatam, will enter the ear holes of the hearer of Bhagavatam and sit in the hearts of the hearers and purify his hearts of all contamination. Right? So Lord is compared to forest fire. When the forest fire, you know, attacks a forest, nothing in the forest will remain. Everything is burned to ashes. Similarly, when the forest fire of Krishna enters our hearts, no contamination can remain in our hearts. And how to invite that Krishna within our hearts? Through the medium of sound vibration. So, next verse. Siyannastavangrir shubhasaya dhumaketu kshemaya yo munibhirardra hrudodhyamana yassatvataihi samavibhutaya atmavadbhir vyuherchita svasanasa svaratikramaya syannastavangrira shubhasaya dhumaketu kshemaya yo munibhirardra hrudohyamana yah sattvataihi samavibhutaya atmavadbhir vyuherchita svasanasa svaratikramaya.
Great sages, desiring the highest benefit in life, always cherish your lotus feet within their hearts, which are melted by love for you. Similarly, your self-controlled devotees, desiring to cross beyond the material kingdom of heaven to achieve opulence equal to yours, worship your lotus feet in the morning, at noon, and in the evening. Thus, they meditate upon your lordship in your quadruple expansion. Your lotus feet are just like a blazing fire that burns to ashes all the inauspicious desires for material sense gratification.
Syannah tavanghri rashubhashaya dhumaketu. So we just offer obeisances to or surrender to your lotus feet. And what is the effect of such surrender? Ashubha asaya dhumaketu. Dhumaketu means annihilating fire, devastating fire. When fire attacks a building or a forest or some house, it just devastates everything. Right? So ashubha asaya dhumaketu. Our heart is filled with so many ashubha asaya. Ashubha means inauspicious, impure, contaminated. Asaya means aspirations, desires. So our hearts are filled with contaminated aspirations. Lord, like an annihilating fire, devastating fire, will burn all of them to ashes. That's why he is called Ashubhashaya Dhumaketu. Beautiful word. The demigods address the Lord as Ashubhashaya Dhumaketu in another verse also. It's coming up. Kshemaya yo munibhir ardhra hrudodhyamanah. So this is indicating the worship of sages. Kshemaya yo, for their own welfare, munibhi, great sages, ardhra hrudohyamanah. So ardhra hrida means with melted heart. Right? So they carry the lotus feet of the Lord within their hearts, which are like melting with affection for the Lord. And because of keeping the Lord within their hearts, and the Lord has the ability to purify their contaminated aspirations, they experience that purification. Right? So, yah sattvataihi samavibhutaya atmavadbhir vyuhe architaha svashanasaha svar atikramaya. So, yah sattvatair means devotees. So first two lines are about sages, munibhir. First two lines about munis. Second two lines are about sattvataihi. Yeah, sattvatair samavibhutaya. They are almost like having equal opulences. Samavibhutaya. Atmavadbhihi. So samavibhutaya actually means sarishti mukti. So some devotees aspire for sarishti mukti. Same opulence as the Lord. What they do? Atmavadbhir, with their self-control, vyuhe architaha. Vyuhe architaha means they worship Chaturvyuha. Who are the Chaturvyuha? Vasudeva, Sankarsana, Aniruddha, Pradyumna. And Vasudeva plus three Purushavataras are considered to be the expansions of Sankarsana, Pradyumna and Aniruddha. So they worship Lord Vasudeva, Lord Karanodaka Sai Vishnu, Lord Garbhodaka Sai Vishnu and Lord Kshirodaka Sai Vishnu. Right? So Swashana Sahasvaratikramaya, for crossing beyond this heavenly planets. Swar Atikramaya. Swashana Saha means at three junctions of the day, morning, evening and night, they worship three times. To cross these heavenly planets also. Swar Atikramaya. Swar means Svargaloka. Atikramaya means they want to cross over these material heavens. They want to come to you. Right? They don't want to come to our planets. They want to cross our planets and then come to you. So that is the aspiration of them. So basically here, the effect of Lord's lotus feet is mentioned. Ashubhashaya dhumaketu. Now in the purport, the conditioned living entity can purify his existence simply by having firm faith in the transcendental glories of the personality of Godhead. When that can be, what can be said of extraordinary good fortune of demigods who are directly seeing his lotus feet? Although we are presently afflicted by innumerable material desires, these desires are temporary. Next they make a beautiful statement. The eternal living entity is meant to experience a loving relationship with the supreme living entity. And by rendering pure devotional service, the heart of the living entity is completely satisfied. First, we are lost. Our eternal connection with Krishna is forgotten. So one has to revive that. One has to remember that. One has to recollect that. So one has to revive that remembrance of lost relationship. Second, one has to derive satisfaction in that relationship. Now, somebody has forgotten that he has 1,000 crores in his locker. No, you remind him, you have 1,000 crores, you have 1,000 crores. Oh, my first 1,000 crores, okay, fine. If he becomes neutral, oh, I have 1,000 crores, then also he's not having any effect of that remembrance. He has to derive satisfaction from it. Oh, I have 1,000 crores with me. Then I can do this, I can do that. I can buy this, I can purchase that. I can purchase a building. I can donate it to someone. I can utilize this for that purpose. So there should be some excitement also. So, by hearing, one may remember one's relationship with Krishna. Oh, theoretically, you will understand. I'm connected with Krishna. Fine. Okay, what is the subject in today's lunch? Right? So, topic is gone. So, that remembrance has come, but it has not given him nourishment and satisfaction. It has not sufficiently excited him. Theoretically, everybody knows here that we are connected with Krishna. But are we sufficiently excited? Are we satisfied in that relationship with Krishna? Right? Are we feeling nourished? So that one needs to check. So both are there. So that is this statement. The eternal living entity is meant to experience a loving relationship with the supreme living entity, and by rendering devotional service, he should be completely satisfied. And when will that satisfaction come? When you actually utilize that 1,000 crore money to fulfill some of your desires. As long as that is in the locker, that will not give you any satisfaction. Only an information is there. That locker may hai, paisa. But you utilize it to fulfill some of your purposes, then you will get the satisfaction. Similarly, by hearing, one may know that I am connected with Krishna. I have a connection with Krishna, eternal connection. But by rendering service, we are actually working on that relationship. Right? We are deriving satisfaction in that relationship. So, service will deepen our connection with Krishna. Hearing will remind us of the connection with Krishna, but service will establish and deepen and give satisfaction in our connection with Krishna. What is that verse? Asesha sanklesha samam vidhatte gunanu vada shravanam murare kim va punastat charanaravinda paraga seva ratiratma labdha. Just by hearing Krishna katha, asesha sanklesha samam, one will be, all one's miseries will be vanquished just by hearing Krishna katha. If that is the effect of Krishna katha, hearing, what to speak of one who has developed taste for serving Krishna. Kimva punastat charanaravinda paraga seva ratir atmalabdha. Ratir, he has developed an interest and inclination to serve Krishna. So service is one step ahead of just the hearing. Right? Hearing is not passive. When the hearing comes into action, that becomes service. So further, sama vibhutaye, this we already discussed. Vyuha also we discussed. 11th verse, last verse for today. Yaschintyate prayatapanibhir adharangnau trayani rukta vidhinesha havir grihitva adhyatma yoga utayogi viratma mayam jignasubhi parama bhagavatai prati parishta.
Those about to offer oblations into the fire of sacrifice in accordance with the Rig, Yajur and Samvedas meditate on your lotus feet. Similarly, the practitioners of transcendental yoga meditate upon your lotus feet, hoping for knowledge about your divine mystic potency. And the most elevated pure devotees perfectly worship your lotus feet, desiring to cross beyond your illusory potency.
So not only the devotees are worshipping you, even karmis and jnanis are also worshipping you only. So this verse is describing about three categories of people who are worshipping the Lord. Lord's lotus feet are worshipped by karmis, jnanis and bhaktas. Yas chintyate prayata pani bhiradharagnau traya nirukta vidhinesha havir grihitva. So karmis, how do they worship the Lord? They perform fire sacrifices and according to the three Vedas. Traya means this three Rug, Yajus, Sama Vedas. Following their injunctions, they worship the lotus feet of the Lord. Then, jnanis, how do they worship? They meditate on the lotus feet of the Lord, hoping for jnana, knowledge. Then, pure devotees, they worship the lotus feet of the Lord, desiring to cross over this samsara or maya. Adhyatma yoga yuta yogi bhiratma mayam. Then, jignasubhir paramabhagavatai parishtaha. So, like that, Lord is worshipped by different categories of people. Okay. The mystic yogis are eager to acquire knowledge. In any case, everyone is interested in the potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The atheistic material scientists are also fascinated by the external potency of the Lord. The gross sense gratifiers are attracted by the physical body, which is also Atmamaya, or an expansion of Lord's potency. So, different people may be aspiring for different features or aspects of the Lord, as Madhava Gopal Prabhu is also describing. Right? Somebody just fell into the jail. If it is a social worker, he will think, are the criminals getting uniform properly? If he is an analyzer, a scientist kind of things, what is the bars of jail made of? So like that he is saying, right? So everybody is trying to connect with Krishna, analyze the energies of Krishna only. Either internal energy or external energy. Right? Everybody is trying to approach Krishna only. Either his impersonal feature or personal feature or partial expansion. But ultimately, everybody is trying to interact with Krishna. Everybody is interacting with Krishna in certain feature. but he is not realizing that I am interacting with Krishna only. So that is the difference. Although all the Lord's potencies are qualitatively one with the Lord, and therefore with each other, the blissful spiritual potency is nevertheless supreme because it establishes relationships between the Lord and pure living entities on the platform of eternal happiness. Our dreaming and waking up experiences are both activities of the mind. However, the activities we perform while awake are more valuable than those we perform in dream, is it not? So, similarly, at every moment, living entity is experiencing one of the innumerable potencies of the Lord. However, if he is experiencing the spiritual potency, that is more significant. We have to be under the influence of either Daivi Prakriti or Gunamayi Prakriti. Either Srimati Radharani or Durga Devi. We have to be in touch with or under the influence of some energy of the Lord. So which energy we are in contact with, that depends on our inclination. But internal potency, that will benefit our soul. External potency, that will degrade our soul. That we need to understand. So, okay. When a sincere devotee eagerly desires to attain the shelter of the Lord's lotus feet, the Lord brings him to his personal abode. Okay, thank you all very much. Grantharashrimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Tomorrow we will complete this chapter. And day after tomorrow, we can start 7th chapter. Tomorrow only we can start 7th chapter, if possible. So this is 24 Guru section. So we can arrange for a PowerPoint. So I had PowerPoint made with all the 24 gurus and the lessons associated. Six gurus correct. We discussed in our retreat. Now 24 will complete. You found some 60 gurus, no? Okay, thank you. Questions?